So just before we get into this episode, I would like to announce something very exciting, and that is that Pause Trading are now sponsoring this podcast. So that is alongside Naylor Agility Tunnels, and I honestly can't tell you how excited I am by this. I have been a huge fan of Pause Trading products since the very start of me doing agility. If you're from the UK, you will probably know who they are already, because they are at majority of our shows, very present, and especially for me in the north, I see them almost every show. But Pause Trading is a brilliant family-run business. They have every product known to mankind that you might need for your dog training and dog care needs. So whether it's a road refresher ball, long-lasting chews, toys that are made specific for agility, you name it, they have it. And I can't explain to you how excited I am to be working with these guys. I have just received my first package from them, so I will be reviewing them as I go, and their products, which, as you already know, I'm probably going to be a huge fan of anyways. But the first products I've received are the Blue Pink Pig vet bedding and Paws Made Chaser toys, and that has the cutest design with a little pig on. And I've also received amazing treats. I've got their fish and poultry training treats, and we have some pate, which is going to go down so well with my guys, and the ball cubes as well. So I'm really excited to test those out. If you're interested in finding out more, you can always message me or catch me at a show. But yeah, without further ado, we'll get into this episode. And of course, as well, thank you to Naylor Agility for sponsoring this podcast too. They've just released their new non-slip plus agility tunnels, so definitely get in touch if you'd like to hear more. But without further ado, we'll get into it. Hi everyone, I've got two very exciting guests with me today. So the lovely Safi Layfield and Grace Watts, and we're going to be discussing about judging and being a young judge. That's not the whole title, but I'll just go with that for now. So guys, just to introduce yourselves, if you can tell us a little bit about your experience in agility, how long you've been doing it for, how many dogs you have, and how long you've also been judging so far.
Okay, so I'm Grace, and I've been doing agility since about 2016, so maybe about 7 years now. Give or take, because it's been quite a journey. I've got two dogs. I've got a duck toller and a border collie. Been judging since June 2022, so still relatively quite new to judging. And was it my best achievement? My best achievement is probably being on Team GB this year and competing at the Junior Open Agility World Championships. That was a really, really fun experience.
Wow, amazing. I mean, from perspective of actually being a spectator onto the juniors, you all did immensely incredible. So big props to you all for that. It looked amazing.
Thank you.
And you, Safi?
I've been in agility 6 years. I have three dogs currently, two border collies and my little disabled terrier. Yeah, a little Milo, although don't have so much sympathy for him. He's little... Actually, am I allowed to swear? I don't know if I'm allowed to swear.
Oh yeah, go for it. I don't mind.
No sympathy for him. I started judging earlier this year. I passed my judging exam in October of last year. And I've done four judging appointments so far. My biggest achievement so far, I don't really know, to be honest. nothing too exciting just yet, I suppose.
And also on a judging point of view, both of you have been invited to judge at Iconics, which is, I think, a huge judging achievement, if anything.
Yeah, it's a massive honour, really. Yeah.
Yeah, really, really enjoyable as well. So it's great. Great thing to be involved with, and a pleasure always.
Yeah, I think it's really fun to set those courses, and you get a lot of really fun partnerships at Iconics as well.
Yes, I love setting those courses, and I do try to set them at every appointment. But you go into Iconics and you're you're confident that the right demographic of people is there and they're going to enjoy it and they're going to attack it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great.
And that kind of leads on to our first sort of discussion point, which is obviously personal experiences. So far since starting our judging careers, what's positively surprised you the most? I think one thing that's positively surprised me is actually how supportive ring party can be, how helpful a ring party can be, and how much of a difference in your day it is. So I guess a positive from that is when you have a really cool ring party, it makes your day so much better. And it just makes everything feel a lot easier. I don't know if that's a similar experience for you guys. Grace, I don't know about you.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And it's really great because you do actually meet people through ring party as well. Mm-hmm. So I've had people that I've literally met because they've happened to be my ring party when I haven't brought one. And you know, you end up seeing them around and they become your friends, and yeah, it's all good fun. Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Nice. Yeah,
I think ring party is just, you don't realize how much you appreciate them until you're judging. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, all my ring party have always been amazing. And they've always been so helpful, and they're also kind.
Yeah,
I don't know if I find that.
I think especially when it's like a ring party, maybe you don't know. So, for example, I think it was Nottingham. I knew most of my ring party, but it wasn't people who like I see day in day out, or I'd feel maybe confident enough to ask if they'd ring party for me. But actually, do you know what? It made such a difference. Like the day was really funny, and you know, sometimes going into it, especially I think as a young, maybe new judge, sometimes I get a bit conscious of thinking, oh, who's my ring party going to be? Do I know them? You know, what am I going into? But actually, when it's such a relief when you've got really nice people, and plus when they're volunteering the time as well and they don't know you, I think that's extra special as well.
Yeah. I always find it quite funny actually as well. I think I've had a couple of times where the ring party have gone, oh, you're the judge, because you know,
they turn up to help like get all your courses set, and I was like, okay, so can you help me this, and I'm like, oh no, I'll show you where we're putting it.
I'll tell you where I want stuff actually.
Earth angels. Wonderful people.
Oh god, yeah. I don't, honestly, sometimes, I mean, if you're like me and you're very last minute, sometimes when you're pegging all your tunnels, I have been told a few times I need to be a bit more organized with that, but when you have a ring party that are all there and they're like, yep, sure, I'll help peg, oh, it makes such a difference. That is when I'm like, oh, this is the best ring party.
I just like, I'll do it, you want it, I'll do it. I'm like, yes,
that attitude is just spot on.
Yes,
exactly. Super. So controversially to that, what's shocked you guys the most since judging so far?
I think it's the pressure. Mm-hmm. I wasn't, maybe actually pressure that I didn't even feel as much when I started judging, but as I've kind of become more knowledgeable and maybe aware of what I'm setting, how I'm judging, you know, stuff that you sort of become more nitpicky about when you become more experienced and are wanting to better yourself. Mm. I put a lot of pressure on myself, and I think definitely the self-pressure is actually maybe even more of a factor than the pressure that I feel from competitors. Mm. So I think that's definitely something I wasn't prepared for myself, but it does make sense because, you know, when you are kind of feeling like you need to be improving and you want to be improving, because that's, you know, I'm sure we can all agree on this. You know, we're wanting to be better judges all the time. We're wanting to get better at course design. You know, it's all this kind of self-criticism that you have to kind of keep in check so that it doesn't become pressure. But yeah, I think that's the only thing I've noticed that I can say is negative, and it isn't really negative at all, but it's just pressurizing.
I know exactly what you mean by that actually. I kind of feel like I feel like as people, you get to get a lot of feedback, especially from people you look up to, and I think when you start getting that feedback, you almost kind of feel a pressure to continue doing well.
Yeah.
I think it really worries me to put out a what I would deem a bad course or for a course that wouldn't run well. And actually I had a competitor who I do look up to, and it was my second judging appointment. She was like, I expect your courses to be, you know, the best courses of the weekend. And like, it was meant as a compliment, but I remember thinking, oh my God, now I'm really worried they don't run well. And they did end up running really well, but it was one of those comments where you're like a little bit like, oh God.
Yeah, it is scary, 100%. I mean, for me, I think Nottingham was at a point where I was like, this went really well, I was really pleased with my course. And then every point after that, I was completely comparing it. I was thinking, oh God, is it going to live up to kind of the expectations? Because like you say, when people start to kind of give comments on your courses, and, you know, it's lovely. I love when people are really positive about my courses. But at the same time, it, like you say, it's a little bit of a pressure there. It's like, oh God, I really need to replicate this. And then every time you're kind of considering your courses, you're thinking, is this going to run how that one did? Is it going to be as received as nicely? I think every appointment, as you say, there's always maybe more of a pressure, because I think when you first start, you've not got those expectations set yet.
I think you start of kind of getting a mini reputation. That's where it all comes down to. And you know, you set one course, it might not run as well as you intended it to, and you think, gosh, this is it, like, I've ruined my reputation. And it's like, well, actually no, it's part of the whole learning experience. You know, no one's perfect, which is another thing that I know I've had to really come to terms with, because I'm a massive perfectionist.
Yep.
And you know, not everything's gonna go to plan, but as long as you know, you take the experience and you take something good out of it, or you know, learn from it, I think, you know, you're doing your best.
Exactly. And I think, like you say, trying to let go of that perfectionism is really important, because I'm exactly the same. It's so easy to kind of fall into the trap of thinking this has to be foot perfect. Otherwise, as you say, it's like, oh my God, people are going to think I'd set horrible courses. And, you know, I think every appointment I've had so far, there's always been one thing where I thought, oh, I wish I'd just changed that. But then, like I say, sometimes everything kind of plays to different people's strengths. So I guess it's, again, remembering that side of it. You know, some people might maybe make a comment which isn't necessarily helpful in terms of safety. You know, it might not apply to safety, but actually to their training and what their dog skills are at. But sometimes I think those comments can make it harder, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. It's hard. I think actually another thing that shocked me was, I found that I expected the Kennel Club to actually help a little bit more, maybe within the first judging appointment. I was kind of surprised. It was like, you know, you kind of approach an organization to, or a show to host you, or you know, they ask you whatever, and then that's it, you know, like nobody really helps you. You know, in theory, like your mentor that they might give you could be there, but that's not necessarily always going to be the case. And I'm actually kind of surprised that there's nobody almost overseeing maybe your first judging appointment, or like nobody to be on hand immediately. And don't get me wrong, like show organizers are amazing, and you know, my first judging appointment, like I know I could have gone to them with anything, but it just kind of surprises me that we're just kind of almost just left to it from the beginning a little bit. And I think it would be helpful, especially for, you know, new, young, everybody, to just like have for those, but at least the first appointment, to have somebody there that's, you know, knowledgeable that you can go to. Yeah. And like I say, you know, there are other judges there and stuff, but a lot of the time they're busy, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. And I think I was quite lucky, because both my trainers who have trained me right since the start of doing agility, they're both very experienced judges. I think they've been judging, I won't say how long because it might let their age go. I'm sorry, Anne. I'm sorry, Jim. You're listening. But they've been judging a very long time, so I was quite fortunate that they mentored me for quite a few shows. But as you're saying, that's not the case for everyone, and especially when you know, when you think the judges mentors, I think sometimes they need a little bit more support as well. I mean, not only are they doing it in their spare time a lot of the time, you know, they've still got jobs, they've also got several kind of judges at one occasion, and if everyone's judging everywhere, it must be so difficult to try and like give that support. So I think they also maybe need a little bit more assistance from the kennel club as well. I don't know if you'd agree.
Yeah, I always feel quite guilty about going to people sometimes because I think, oh God, you must be getting inundated right now, you know. So I do try, I have a few people that I will, you know, send ideas to or send full plans to, just to kind of mix it up a little bit. Advice, like variation in advice sometimes, you know, just not having that one person, sometimes not having all your eggs in one basket kind of thing. I like that I can have a couple people that I can go to and really trust to kind of give me the best and help me the most. But yeah, I definitely agree that these people, they must be, you know, quite overwhelmed at times.
Oh, gotcha. I mean, I think, I'm trying to think how many are on my course. There's at least a good 10 of us. So if you think trying to hold down, I mean, I'm in a full-time job and God, I can't imagine trying to do that on the side as well. And mentor 10 people. Mm-hmm. And obviously they've probably got a lot more as well previously qualified. So yeah, no, it is, must be very stressful. So next sort of point for discussion on this one. What's been the biggest lesson you've learned so far whilst doing an appointment? It can be anything. It could be a big lesson. It could be a small tip that, you know, might be helpful for other judges. I think the biggest lesson I've learned is how much each appointment you'll grow with knowledge. Like, it's insane how much in my first year of appointments, like each one I've done, I've learned so much more every time about, you know, dog's foot placement, landing points, striding. Like, the more I judge, I find the better my understanding's getting now, if that makes sense. And also kind of running my dog over the courses. I mean, there's been a few times where I've not been able to run my dog over the course and I've set it up at training and I've ran bits and I've like, yeah, that could have been easier. That could have been, you know, adjusted slightly, or I'll run my dog maybe over it the night before and I think, oh, actually I'll move that. So I think sometimes having a dog that you can practice a course with can be beneficial. But equally, just as much if you're getting out there and judging, I think gives you a lot more perspective of where dogs are landing, because you see so many different breeds, types, sizes, shapes and everything. Don't know what you guys think to that one.
Yeah, I was gonna say, kind of, I run, well, both of mine are intermediate and I run another dog in large, and then at training I run some smalls. And I think having in a like kind of day where we have shows, where you might be judging the same course on all four different heights, getting to realize how differently they run across the heights is definitely something I've learned. Having to tweak, you know, dog walk approaches, or having to tweak the odd thing here and there just because that dog's not going to turn as wide, I don't want that to be as, you know, hard of a line, kind of stuff like that. Running dogs of different heights has definitely helped me with that. And I think, again, like as you said, the experience of having dogs that I don't necessarily, or heights that I don't necessarily run competitively, getting to see how they run more has definitely taught me a lot about dogs' lines.
Yeah, I totally agree. So I do a little bit of teaching, and predominantly beginners. So they do all sorts of weird and wonderful things all the time. And you get dogs that are super slow, super fast, everything in between. And I think, do you know what? My biggest piece of advice for anybody getting into wanting to know how dogs move, if you don't have the opportunity to run lots of different dogs, go and watch a beginner's class, go and watch a few different beginner's class, because you'll get an idea of how dogs naturally move without a handler that's actually going to be able to handle them. And it's watching them that actually really helps. I think also seeing how just slightly having a different angle before a dog walk approach could actually make something dangerous and make a handler, like a, you know, somebody who doesn't know what they're doing, send a dog around a different wing. And then also taking into account how these dogs move. And it's just, there's so many things you have to take into account. And I think, you know, if people who don't have the experience of running multiple different heights of dogs, actually just even or even just going and watching a show, like watching how dogs move, you know, watch the lower grades. Don't just watch how dogs with, you know, experienced handlers handle their dogs. Watch the dogs that watch what they do when their handlers, you know, mess up, because we all mess up, even the experienced handlers mess up. But, you know, it's, I think it's important that we try to keep things as safe as possible. And by learning how dogs move, lots of different types of dogs move, we can get an understanding of that. And like Grace says, you know, we might need to tweak things between different heights, because, you know, a Mallee is never going to have the same stride pattern, you know, a Terrier is going to have. It's never going to happen.
Oh, God, no. Imagine. I don't know if I'd ever. I think it'd be terrifying if I saw a Terrier that was able to cover the same amount of ground as a Mallee. That would be a fast dog. But yeah, no, I agree. I think it is, like I say, being able to see each other's, well, see different dogs compete. I mean, I personally find 1 to 3 the hardest grade to pitch courses for, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Especially at the minute, because it's just so difficult to get it. Sometimes it feels like it's very difficult to get it right. And I don't think it's as overcomplicated as I'm making it in my head. But yeah, I think because, as you say, you know, handlers who, you know, maybe grade one, you know, haven't got the experience of how to make a line safe, don't have the knowledge of why it's not safe. It's just it's difficult to explain that to them, and trying to make sure that they're going to take the right line. You've got to be sure, because like I say, there's always going to be that one person that'll take the angle where you think, no, please don't go that way. So yeah, I don't know if you guys agree on that one as well.
Yeah, definitely. I've even set, because I do a bit of teaching as well, and again, very, very, very beginner, and I have taken courses, you know, that I've set, or sequences from courses that I've set, 1 to 2 or 1 to 3, and kind of put them, set them up, broken them down into bits. And a couple of times I have put numbers out and I've said, think about how you would handle this. And it is quite eye-opening. And again, there's no kind of limit or rule as to how long you have to have been doing agility before you enter a competition. You know, how competent your dog should be. It's all completely subjective and up to you. But yeah, I think definitely handler wise as well, helping your dog getting safe lines is a big thing. Mm-hmm. And not forcing lines, but also making sure that if something goes wrong in the handling, it's able to be recovered without being dangerous. Or it's really, really tricky, and sometimes it isn't achievable, but you know, it's doing your best and feeling like, oh my gosh, you know, that thing happened. And at the same time, feeling responsible, but also feeling like, is there anything I could have done as a judge? Or is that kind of up to the handler for, you know, maybe taking a dog that's slightly too inexperienced, or themselves, and putting them in a place where, you know, they're potentially risking their dog's well-being. But again, it's very, very tricky to know at what point you feel responsible and what point you don't if you've set a safe course.
Yeah. Oh, I really agree with that point. And actually, I really like that you touched on there about sort of the success, and a little bit about success with them, because I think that's another pressure as well sometimes. When I set a course, I'll be constantly judging, okay, has that gone wrong because of I've set the lineup like that, or has that gone wrong because the dog's just not got the skills, or again, is the skill too difficult for this grade, like am I pitching it too high, or am I being realistic and this dog just hasn't got that. I think that's another kind of maybe thought in the back of the mind when you're judging. I don't know if you guys are the same for that one.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, actually. I just kind of, with 1 to 2, 1 to 3, I mean, if it has grade one in it, I just kind of see it as, if my beginners could not get around this, it's too hard. That's just kind of how I see it. I actually find 3 to 5, 4 to 5 actually a little bit harder, because I feel like I've got 1 to 2, 1 to 3 down now. I think I have quite a good understanding of what's set now, what's attainable. And I have quite a high percentage of clears now on my 1 to 3 courses. And I'm actually quite glad about that, considering, you know, when, you know, you come out in these baby dog classes, you know, inexperienced handler classes, you know, you're typically going to get a higher percentage of eliminations or faults, because, you know, everybody's still learning. Whereas like 3 to 5, 4 to 5, I find actually I feel like it's almost an in-between. And I think some people almost expect harder, some people expect easier. And like, for example, my 6 sevens, I kind of go all out on my 6 sevens now. And I kind of find it hard to find that balance of the middle between what would be the middle between that of my one, like my 1 to 3s and my 6 sevens. So I don't know what you guys think about that, but.
Yeah, I so agree with that. Yeah, I find it's like 4 to 5 and 3 to 5. It's the bridge, and it's a very, very broad bridge between something extremely undemanding. And rightfully so, you know, we've got inexperienced dogs, inexperienced handlers, up to something where you're really expecting a very wide skill set and you're really testing as much as you can within reason on a course. And I think, you know, my 4 to 5s, I do try and include lots of different skills, you know, and especially different handling options. So, you know, maybe somewhere where you could do a push around like wrap, or you could do a threadle wrap, you know, up to the handler's kind of decision and not forcing particular handling options, so that you can kind of practice the things that you need to get better at, or maybe if you're not quite ready to have that challenge, you can do things you're more comfortable with in terms of handling. Stuff like that. But again, like, it's really hard to kind of give that variation and pitch it right between the very top and the very bottom.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And I mean, my main competing dog at the moment is grade 5, and he's gone up the grades this year, but that grade 3-5 boundary is so different. And I think when we compare it to maybe FCI, you know, you've got A1 A2 A3, I think it's quite clear on their courses, if that makes sense, like the skill set. And plus, I think their A1s, I've no doubt in saying it, their A1s are so much harder than what we get in the UK, or at least the skill set that we're used to seeing constantly. Sorry, it's just saying we're getting close to time. But yeah, I think in the UK compared to the A1s we see abroad, what's asked of the dog at an early age is quite different. So, you know, are we maybe potentially getting our dogs out sooner than they should, or should we bring dogs out with maybe a higher skill set than they are? That's me throwing a can of worms in there. We don't have to answer that one. That could be a whole podcast on its own. But yeah, I think when we look at the comparison, I think that's maybe why FCI have got it so down, I guess, in their grade differences, because I feel like you can tell as soon as you look at their courses, you can tell straight away what's A1 A2 A3. I don't know if you guys agree or not.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. There's a lot of gray area in KC, and again, I think that's where a lot of the pressure comes as a judge. When you set something that's maybe on the harder end of a 4-5 or a 3-5, and you think, oh god, is this right? But you know, at the end of the day, it probably is, because we just have these kind of very wide, like very broad expectations rather than something very, very specific.
And like I say, I think because we've got so many judges as well, it is so purely down to personal opinion sometimes. So depending on what that judge's experiences are, how much they maybe train or expect of their dogs, I think that has a huge impact on what they kind of set, if that makes sense. I mean, I know for me, maybe I wouldn't be teaching my young dogs a threadle wrap or a threadle when they're grade 1, but definitely by the time they're going up to grade 4, well, at least grade 3 now, I would probably say I'm going to start introducing that with them. But again, other people would expect different, I guess, and I think that's where those issues come into play. I think grade appropriateness, I don't even think that's a word actually, what's grade appropriate is very down to the individual and what they expect of their dogs and maybe students and whatnot, which is again why we've got so many kind of gray areas and arguments about it on social media, because as I say, everyone, it's completely down to your own sort of opinion. I don't think there's not really any guidance from memory. It's been a year a bit since I did my judges course, but from personal memory, I can't remember if there's anything actually detailing what is grade appropriate and what's not. So I think
No.
No, I think I remember, like, isn't grade one to three something is meant to be nice and flowing or something? And it's like, well, you could set up a champ course that's nice and flowing.
Exactly,
But also, I think, you know, touching on, you know, the points about FCI and stuff, it's like, where do we, I guess, you know, as judges, you know, and young judges, we're, I guess, pointing agility in the direction we want to go in, right? We're essentially, you know, the future of agility. So, you know, and I guess it's where we want agility to go. And some people might not agree with that, and that's fine. And they're still going to have their agility. I'm sure it's not going to change so vastly that there's only these fast and flowing courses. I'm sure you'll still get your traditional UK courses. But I don't know about you guys, but when I look at what I want to design, I'm typically looking at, you know, grade one, two, three courses from Europe. You know, I'll, like, it's like why I'm saying about three to fives and four to fives being quite hard to pitch, because I'll look at, you know, grade two courses from FCI, and then I'll make something that's very similar to that, and then I'll show it to somebody who's very experienced in computing. Unfortunately, I've only ever managed to get to grade four before, so I don't have experience in computing at grade seven or higher than that. And they'll be like, yeah, that's literally a champ level course. And but I train my dog, even, you know, just, I train my dog all sorts of skills. I don't think, you know, I do very much think if we train our dogs to just sprint in a fast line, it's going to be harder to teach those skills later on. I'm not saying like I absolutely don't just start off with teaching freddles and stuff, but I equally think, you know, a soft freddle that is on a dog's natural line is always going to be easier, or a backside or whatever, it's always going to be easier than a straight jump that is never going to make sense to them. I feel like it's all about where, you know, what our plans as individual judges, what we want to do. And I think it's kind of hard when we're looking at something that, like you say, you know, you can kind of tell what's grade one, grade two, grade three abroad, whereas you can't really here. You can never really look at a course and go, oh yeah, that's for sure three to five, because I've seen three to fives that absolutely would be a champ level, or I've seen three to fives that I would say, oh, that could be a one to three. Don't know. And I think that's what's it's really difficult, and I think you're never going to please everybody.
No, definitely not. And I think, again, like I say, it is just down to that individual. I mean, one thing's going to work for one person, it's not going to work for another. And I think mindset's a huge part of that. So, I mean, I like to go into things, if I've not trained it, that's my fault. That's not the judge being mean and trying to set me up to fail, and they don't want me to win. I've heard all that before. It's nothing like that. It is essentially a training thing. I've not got the skill. I'm going to go away and work on that now. And I think I like it. I like pushing my skills in the ring and thinking, oh, actually, can my dog do that? Do you know what? I'm going to give it a go. If it doesn't, that's fine. I just need to work on it. But I think mindset's a huge thing with that.
And like, by all means, like, a freddle wrap has no business being in a one to three.
Yeah.
like there are certain skills that you would not expect to see in certain grades that are really obvious. But yeah. I think if something is genuinely on a dog's natural line, it's going to be harder to set something that's on the face of the jump. That's what people are almost expecting.
Awesome. Okay. So next point area for discussion is for preparing and fulfilling appointments. So what kind of preparation is involved in the lead up to appointments, and how do you manage it alongside work, education, and generally trying to navigate life as a young adult?
Well, I personally don't. I just, you know,
right answer.
I'm a very, I don't want to say I'm a last minute person, but, you know, I just do things as they come.
Yes.
So I, you know, I try not to stress too much. I find time for things. You know, I think that's all going to change in about 2 weeks when I go to university, but, you know, for now it's been working, but change is coming. So, but yeah, I basically try not to stress, get everything done in good time. If I can, you know, there have been a few times where I've been, by no fault of my own, very rushed in comparison to sometimes, you know, ground conditions mean my ring size has changed or something, so I've got to redesign because, you know, stuff like that, kind of when it's out of your control, does stress me out, and there's not an awful lot you can do to prepare. But, you know, typically just getting things done in good time. Course is done a few weeks before the appointment, so you have time to kind of review, get other people to look at, so you can set them up and run them yourself and see how they are, kind of stuff like that. I think the main kind of thing is how I prepare.
Yeah, 100%. And I think I like the phrase diamonds are made under pressure, because that gives me a get out of jail card sometimes.
I know
I'm very similar. I think you just have to get on with it. Like, so for example, for my context is, I was working full time when I started judging, but I'm now like in a my boyfriend calls it my proper full time job, because this one is like my first like full-on adult job. And oh my god, you just literally have to fit things in where you can, because it is so difficult. And like I say, trying to be young and you know, still have a social life and train your dogs and you know, try and get chores done and just be an adult, a young adult again, trying to navigate actually getting through life accordingly, if that makes sense, trying to figure things out. I think it's so difficult to balance. But as you say, I think you just got to do what you can do your best, I guess, which sounds very cliche and cringeworthy. But I think it's not an easy one, for sure. I think it's nice if people can know that everyone struggles to some degree, maybe.
Yeah, I agree. So I've learned over the past few judging appointments that I really need to give myself kind of a day before and at least a day or two after of pretty much doing nothing. So I don't know, I just find judging really mentally exhausting, not even just physically exhausting, but really mentally exhausting. I have a really small social battery, so I need to make sure that it's charged up before I go, and then I have time to recover after, because otherwise I'm like a zombie for like a week. And that might not be the same for everybody, and maybe it gets easier the more you judge, but I've found that actually I've started incorporating just giving myself a bit of time. And I also need time to sort my dogs out. So I'm not lucky enough to have people to help me out with my dogs as much as I could. I have friends, sure, but also I really don't like asking friends to go away from their dogs and stuff like that if they don't have to. But for example, a judging day for me looks very much like, you know, I walk my dogs, I set up my course, I go sort my dogs out again. On any breaks, I go and sort my dogs out. My lunch breaks, I spent walking my dogs. You know, after I finish my judging appointment, I'm then sorting my dogs out again. And then I'm either camping or I'm traveling. And I think people don't take that into account as well. And I think potentially, you know, because I'm a young adult, you know, I'm single, and my parents aren't into agility, I'm very much my own with it. And I think potentially some of the older generation, you know, you have partners potentially that will look after your dogs. And I think a lot of people don't actually really realize that it's not just coming up to a show, you do your judging appointment, you leave. For a lot of us, it's not just that, we actually have other things to be doing as well.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. And
I agree with that.
Yeah. And I think, like you say, touching on the, you know, your dog's perspective, I think that adds to your worry in a day when you're judging. I mean, you're worrying about enough things already, but when you're worrying about your dogs as well at the same time, especially with like the weather we've had recently, I mean, it can get so hot some days and you almost feel guilty for doing it.
I hate being in the crate all day. It's like, it's horrible. Yeah. And it's why I don't accept that many judging appointments anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have... like, I've only just recently, at the beginning of the year, I passed my driving test. But before then,
congratulations.
Thank you. It's great. Honestly, I can do so much more now. But it leads me on to the fact that when you are a young judge, like, you know, young enough where you can't drive, you do rely on other people so much. And it is a big, you know, it's a big ask. And, you know, it's hard to ask so much of people sometimes, and especially when it's a show where I kind of want to compete, but I also kind of want to judge. Yeah. So I'm sort of like, I've got to choose, because you are very reliant on other people, especially when you're younger and you haven't got such a secure, stable, you know, career or, you know, life or anything as perhaps the older generation do. And of course, that's going to come with time. I mean, so were they when they were young. But yeah, that's definitely something I found difficult, is again, my parents aren't really into agility. They're very, very supportive. I'm very lucky. But, you know, I don't have a van, so I don't have any secure way of leaving my dogs. You know, they just kind of have to be in the area with my tent is or something like that. And that's why I kind of don't really do shows if I'm going to be doing both judging and competing, because it is just a really difficult balance, as you say, Safi, to kind of get between your dog's welfare and, you know, asking lots of other people, trying to keep yourself calm and not be thinking about too many things when you're supposed to be judging and all that stuff. So yeah, definitely that side I also really understand.
Yeah, it's just, it is so difficult, like I say, when you come from maybe a non-agility background. You know, my parents are exactly the same, very supportive, and I'm super lucky, but at the same time, you know, they're not always at every show with me, and there's been a few appointments this year where I've kind of gone on my own. But again, you're thinking constantly about your dogs and you feel guilty, and I think sometimes that maybe is the thing that stops us from maybe doing more. I mean, I love judging. I'm really, that's actually one thing I forgot to mention earlier. I'm really surprised by how much I enjoy it. I expected to, but I was also terrified at the same time. But actually in the moment, it's so fun. And I would do more, but like I say, it's so exhausting. I mean, it takes so much out of your day. You know, there's a lot of thought that goes into it, a lot of stresses. So yeah, I think if anyone's not a judge and you listen to this, please give us a little bit more empathy on the day. If we're not maybe 100%, that's probably why, because we're stressing about so many other things at the same time.
Yeah, also, most recent judging. Sorry, go on.
Sorry. No, and also like what you were saying about, you know, give us a bit more empathy on the day, you know, don't get mad at us for making a tiny little mistake.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know about you, but you guys, as I get through the judging day, I hit about maybe hour 3.5, 4, and I start kind of going, have I actually marked this dog for anything? Have I eaten this dog? Like, I what's a refusal at this point? What is that? You know, you start to hit a point where you start to go, I have no idea what I'm doing. And you just sometimes need 5 minutes. But I don't think people who don't judge don't realize how tiring it is. Just on the whole, you know, towards the end of Iconics, my God, I've never experienced my legs hurting to a point where I was like almost crying, because I'd been on my feet legitimately like 15 hours because it'd been such a long day. And I loved Iconics. It was amazing. And I really, really enjoyed it. But I don't think people realize this stuff. And then, you know, for somebody to just kind of go, oh, why did you mark that as a refusal? Why didn't you? And it's just like, oh my God, please just give me a break.
Yeah, and your brain can't remember. I think sometimes, you know, you see that many dogs. I mean, I try to remember where I can, but, you know, sometimes it does take a minute for me just to kind of collect my thoughts again and think, oh, okay, that was you. But as you say, just having that sympathy there, that, you know, we're going to make mistakes. We are human at the end of the day.
It's the classic at the end when someone comes up to you and goes, oh, where did he get that 5? And you go, honestly, I don't really remember.
That's where I look at my scribe and I'm like, can you?
You're like, someone help me.
Yeah. I have so much respect for, you know, the judges. Like, I think it was, you know, the European judges, and I think it was Ian who judged like 3 days on the trot Iconics. Ooh. I'm like, I don't know how.
Oh my gosh. Do it. Yes. It's
insane. Like, not and insane in like a admirable way, but
yeah.
I have no idea how they managed to do it. Like, I can only hope I get to the point where I can do that, you know, because like one day of judging and I'm just done.
Yeah, the stamina it takes is insane, isn't it? And I think, and just knowing and like setting that many courses, like, oh my God, like that is a shed load of courses. That would take me a couple of months just to be able to think about and get together and hope that they're somewhat, somewhat good enough. But yeah, it's props to them because that is difficult. And I guess as well, on another level, champ judges, I think putting themselves in that position is just such a terrifying thing, in my opinion. It must be quite pressuring. So putting themselves there and obviously having to be on top form the whole time. I mean, there's, you know,
being expected to be perfect 24/7, aren't you? And I know you do get reviewed, don't you, to be a champ judge anyway.
Yeah.
But God, I think, yeah, you're right. I think that must be absolutely terrifying.
Okay, so the next kind of level of discussion, so point three, is about limitation solutions. So how do you manage being told or feeling as though your age is a limitation? So
I don't feel like my age is a limitation. I don't feel like my age is equal to an experience. I think you can be inexperienced at any age. You know, for example, I have 6 years in agility, but I feel like I truly understand how dogs move and how their lines work. And I'm, you know, I'm really open-minded, and I'm sure I'm going to keep learning as I keep doing agility. And I don't mean to sound horrible saying this, but there are people who have been judging, you know, 10, 15, 20 years. There's evident they have no idea how dogs move. So it's not about how old you are or how young you are or how many years you've been in agility. That's not what experience is. And I feel like this is kind of how I feel with, I don't feel like my age limits me. It's more an experience that limits you. And I truly believe that with anything. I think your age can limit you as a young person, with kind of like how Grace was saying earlier about, you know, relying on your parents to drive you places when you're a little bit younger. But, you know, as you kind of get to my age, being 23, you know, I don't have those sort of limitations, if that makes sense.
And I couldn't agree more. And I think another side of it is maybe, you know, we don't see age as a limitation, but actually people our senior see us differently because of it. I have always felt like that. I mean, I remember very clearly my judge's mentor and my judge's trainer saying to me one day, I was the youngest person in the room, and she said, I need to be mindful that people will try and push it more with me than they will anyone else in this room because of my age. And I guess that, and she said it, you know, completely from a point of view where she was trying to help me. And I agree completely. You know, people will look at you sometimes when you kind of turn up, as we said earlier, you'll turn up in a ring pie, you're like, okay, you're helping. And I'm like, no, I'm the judge. That's where your outfits kind of help a little bit. Sometimes if I'm dressed really posh, they kind of quiz and then they figure it out slowly. But yeah, I think, you know, people have different opinions of you because of your age. Maybe sometimes they make that kind of assumption that you're maybe not experienced, or, you know, oh, well, they look so young that, you know, they can't possibly know anything. And I think that's a really difficult thing to overcome sometimes. And I think it's something we're seeing a lot, especially on social media at the moment. I don't know if you guys have anything to add to that.
I was just going to say, this word experience is so, it's interesting how people interpret that. You know, like we were saying, there's people like, you know, there's young people that might have less experience, as we would say, and there's older people that might have more experience, but I feel like some people, they think time is experience, and to an extent I believe that is correct. You know, the longer you do something, the more experiences you have, but I think equally it's as much about actually analyzing experiences and, you know, actively trying to improve from experiences as it is about having them. So even though you might have had less experience as a young judge, you might be choosing to be really proactive about those experiences. And, you know, I've been doing it more recently, coming home, looking at my course plans, thinking about how my courses ran, and being really critical, you know, constructively. And I think, you know, there's probably a lot of judges that don't do that. And that's where we're seeing this kind of thing where we've got very quote unquote experienced judges, just because they've been doing it longer, that might still not be setting the most modern flowing lines with the dog's natural line of movement in mind. So I really think in that way, experience is as much about what you do with it as it is about how much you have. And I think that goes definitely in hand with what a lot of criticism I've received from older people in the agility or judging community have to say about us younger judges and what we set.
I think that is a great point, and especially like where you touched on, actually, you know, all right, maybe you haven't got the time of experience, but actually, are you being more proactive? You know, someone can come home and look at different courses and practice, you know, spend time every day kind of building on that skill, but you've got some, you know, some people might never really work on that skill and just assume because of time that they've gained that knowledge and not actually try and work on it and improve. And I think that's the big difference we're seeing here in agility at the moment is, you know, people that are actually maybe trying to improve to better for the dog's purpose, and maybe people that are actually, you know, feel that what they know already is enough and that should be it, that should be where we stick, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
I think it's a really good point. And I think I really like the point that, you know, you might have 5 years experience, but do you have, are you actually gaining knowledge from that? So I suppose that's actually more the point is, do you actually have knowledge or not? Because you can be doing something for 5 or 10 years, but are you actually practically learning, like Grace was saying, how she goes away and looks at her courses? And I'm constantly, when I'm watching my courses, and like I feel like I'm getting it down now where I can kind of go, okay, this is working well for this grade because, you know, these are the results we're getting. Or, you know, you kind of get an even distribution of faults across the board or something, you know, there's not one particular area everybody's struggling with. But I also just kind of feel like with limitations in terms of age, I think we're really quick to be labelled by typically older people, but we're really quick to be labelled lazy, I think. You know, like, God forbid we accidentally turn our back for 1 second to have a drink if somebody's been eat. And I know we shouldn't do that, but it's hard. I think it's really hard to, you know, keep your eyes on somebody 100% of the time when, you know, you can watch somebody while having a drink, you know, when they've been eat.
I think I agree as well, and I think sometimes maybe it feels as though because you're young, people are sort of watching you more and trying to, not everyone, but I think you do get the odd occasion where people will try and catch you out and try and say, oh, look at what they've said, that's because they don't know what they're doing or because they've not got that experience. And, you know, yeah, okay, I'll make a mistake, I'll hold my hands up, I've probably made a mistake on every appointment I've done. However, it's what you do with that information that I think sets you apart in terms of where you'll be going with judging. Okay, so next sort of add on to that point is, what can others in the community be doing or maybe are doing successfully already to encourage young judges and help them develop? So what would you say for, you know, maybe before you'd started judging, what do you think would have been beneficial or what are you seeing already that is quite beneficial?
Well, I think when I started judging, there wasn't necessarily anything that was kind of, I don't know, I wanted to start judging because I thought, oh, that looks great. And I thought it was going to enhance my experience of agility, which it absolutely has. But I think we really, really do need to be actively encouraging younger people to come in and be judges as well as doing their competing, because we have so many really, really talented young people, you know. And, you know, people really young, I mean, you know, 10, 11, and they're, at the end of the day, as we are, at some point, we're all the future. And if we're putting young judges down like this, or, you know, they can't see that they're going to be getting the support that they need, how are we going to have this future that we're, you know, trying to make for ourselves? So I think it's really important that we be more public about the kind of support that judges are going to get. And going back again to kind of, what is the KC offering? How much of, you know, self-initiative do we have to take to kind of get this support, is probably putting people off, especially young people that may be a little bit more, you know, less secure in themselves because they're more new or they're younger, as we say. So yeah, I think the main thing is just letting people know and speaking about, as we are now, young judges, and that, you know, this is really the future and this is something really, really special and great.
I couldn't agree more. I think that is such an amazing point. And like I say, the future of agility depends on what we encourage now. And I hate when I see, you know, maybe young people thinking, oh, actually, it seems quite daunting to start judging. And, you know, they feel put off by the things they see. And it is, don't get me wrong, there is a lot of things that come with it, but it is such an enjoyable experience. And like the point you touched on there, Grace, as well, with how much you've learned and how much it's kind of elevated your experience in agility. I mean, I found that too. I mean, I've learned far more in a year of judging than I have in like, God, I think I've been doing agility 8 years now. That year of judging has completely changed my perspective and actually given me a lot more respect as well for a judge, because as you say, when you're a competitor, you just don't appreciate how much goes into that day for the judges and how much actually we rely on people judging for us, because without them we would not be able to compete anywhere near as much as we do.
Yeah, totally. And it's not, I don't even think it's just young judges actually. I think I've had quite a few you know, just adults that aren't young adults just say actually they feel like they don't want to judge due to criticism, and how people go about giving judges their criticism, whether it's warranted or not. And I think, you know, if people are coming forward with their concerns in a kind and understanding way, you know, people, I don't think people would be scared to judge. I think it comes from, you know, it comes from all these negative experiences people are having, and quite frankly, nothing's being done about it. I think it's actually really sad. You know, how many of us have had negative experiences? I mean, I've been lucky that I haven't had anything considerable bad happen, but there have definitely been times where I'm like, I don't feel like that was needed, or you could have approached me in a much nicer way. And I've had people approach me about pretty significant things, actually. So I had a tunnel that, a strap that, it was on the inside of a tunnel, and it hadn't been pegged in. It'd been missed by both me and my ring party. And that's just a human error. And I had somebody come up to me and they just very kindly to the side, quietly just said, "Hey, Safi, I thought you'd want to know that tunnel's not pegged." And I was like, "Oh my God, thank you so much for telling me." And it's just, so in comparison, I had somebody pretty much verbally attack my ring party for one of the fence posts being quote unquote in the line of their dog. Now I was like, okay, whatever, we can move a fence post, it doesn't matter, even if it wasn't even remotely close to the ring, whatever, we can move it if you want it moved, I don't mind. But there's actually no real reason to have a go at anybody about anything if you'd just gone, "Hey, do you mind if we move that fence post?" You know, I don't know why people come across so aggressively just from the beginning. You know, I just don't understand. And I think that's what's putting people off. It's putting people off because everybody comes up to people so aggressively from the beginning. And it's no wonder people are being put off by judging. And I don't want people to be put off by judging. And I don't want to have to hide our bad experiences, because I don't want people to not judge. But at the same time, I want people to know the experiences we're having, because something needs to change at some point. I think that's the sad thing, and I don't really know the best way about that.
I 100% agree, and I think being aware of the things that are happening, I mean, I won't say what appointment or what person or anything like that, but I had an experience quite early on in my first year of judging, and it was my first kind of sort of, well, I was still getting used to setting courses and, you know, what's grade appropriate and what's not, and understanding that, and there was an entry, well, there was a sequence leading to the A-frame that one competitor really didn't like. They was the only person that complained about it. They thought it was too difficult. I think it was a wing wrap onto an A-frame from a certain angle. But it was the only person that complained. And I had, luckily, two very experienced mentors, my trainers. And both of them said, you know, "I can't see a problem with it. It's safe. It decels the dogs before they get onto the A-frame. You know, go with what you want to do," which I did. And the competitor came into the ring, competed a dog, went wrong at this certain point. I think they'd gone wrong elsewhere in the course. They were quite an experienced competitor, actually, which shocked me by the behaviour. But they actually swore in the ring and said, "Oh, God, I know it's shit," to their dog, but very loud enough so I could hear it. And it's like, it's a good job I've got thick skin, because I worked in retail. So, you know, that kind of stuff doesn't faze me. I know it's, you know, I just let it go over my head, but it still affected me. And I think for a lot of people, that could put them off judging completely. Like, that could be the end of their career of judging. They'll say right there and then, "Okay, I can't do that. That's too much for me." And I think it's so important as a competitor to understand that your comments do have an impact. You know, we are all human, and having a little bit more respect. I mean, you know, I get it, you know, some things aren't going to be safe, but as you said, Safi, the approach is so important in how we actually address things. And like you said, when someone's so kind of polite is probably the best way to put it. When someone's polite and, you know, doesn't make it seem like, oh my God, everything's going to end if you do not do exactly as I say. It can make such a difference to your day. You're not going to be dwelling on that comment for the rest of the time. You know, you're not going to be thinking about it after the show. It just makes such a huge difference. And I know a lot of young judges have, and judges in general have similar experiences of things like that happening, and probably more so when you're younger, if that makes sense, because people kind of, I don't know, maybe think they can push it a little bit more. I don't know if you think the same.
Yeah, I think there's always going to be like ifs and buts about everything, but what I really don't like is when people say to me, or you know, or I hear people say to other people, oh, I'd love to become a judge, but, and then they go on to say something about the fact that they're worried they're not going to be respected, or they're worried they're going to be, you know, verbally abused or something like that. That is something that I just feel is so sad, because it is, at the end of the day, basic human respect. And it's really sad that we, our judges, are, you know, worried about this kind of thing that we should be not only expecting an agility, but just as decent human beings, and we're not getting it. And it's this kind of double standard where most, if all, judges are currently competing with dogs or have competed with dogs in the past. We know what it's like. You know, I've definitely had experiences, particularly recently, where I've had competitors talk to me as if I don't know what their position is, and when I literally do compete by myself and I do run my dogs. And it's like, you know, I would respect a judge when I'm a competitor, and a judge should also respect the competitors back. Like, it goes both ways. And as you said, if you raise an issue to me or you talk to me in a polite and respectful way, I'm, you know, I'm gonna give you that back. And it's hard, because when you're a judge, you are told, you know, act with professionalism, and you always should. But I find it so, it's almost like, it's not unfair. I'm not sure what word I'm looking for. It's injustice when you are being, you know, bullied as a judge and being spoken to in a very disrespectful way, that you kind of have to just put up with it and be polite back. And, you know, our competitors aren't kind of getting this idea that actually, you know, we do understand where they're coming from, and they can raise it in a very, in a much more appropriate way, and, you know, cooperate more. It's, you know, it's really sad that this respect is faltering, and, you know, it's a minority, but as with everything, the smallest things can really get to you, and we tend to remember them more.
No, and I don't want to put, it's like I said, I don't want to put people off judging, but like what you were saying earlier there, Grace, is, you know, people are worried about judging, and I feel like we can't even reassure them, you know, when they're saying all these concerns that they have, that they're worried that people are going to be rude to them. We can't even sit here and say, don't worry, it's not going to happen to you, because it's probably going to happen to everybody at the rate it's going. Everybody who judges is probably going to have a similar experience. And I think that's just really, really sad. And I think, you know, we're all going to have courses that, you know, we all compete. We're all going to have courses. We go and walk and we go, I really don't like that. You know, I don't enter a lot of courses under judges because I know I won't like their courses. I'm not going to go and I'm not going to have a fit about how they're not designing courses that I like. I'm not going to go, even dangerous courses at this point, I just won't run them. I would go and I'd maybe go to and talk to somebody who maybe would go and talk to them. But I just actually, do you know what? I think I don't want to cause the drama anymore. I think a lot of these people who are setting dangerous stuff, they set it over and over and over again. And to be honest, they're probably not going to listen to us anyway, because we're young and what do we know? So I typically end up talking to somebody who has experience and has respect, and ask them normally actually to go and speak to these people who are setting dangerous stuff. But even people who are setting dangerous stuff, and for people approaching somebody if they think something's dangerous, you still don't have to be rude about it. Even if the judge is like, well, I think it's fine, okay, just raise your hands and don't run it.
100%. as you say, just approach nicely. And also I think having a solution sometimes can help. I mean, I've had it where, you know, I've had a course and I really couldn't decide what was, how to make this certain section safe. And a good friend who's also a really experienced judge, I was chatting to her about it and she gave me a solution for it. And she sort of said, well, maybe if you tried this, that could help you, you know, help that angle there. And actually worked really nicely. So I think sometimes if someone comes to you and they're actually trying to be productive with the advice they're giving and, you know, giving you a solution, because at the end of the day, you know, when you just start judging, you are trying to figure out so many different things and you're not going to have the answer to everything. You know, that I think that's a huge thing I've learned is that, you know, sometimes on my course, I look at it for so long and I think, God, I need another eye on it, or I need someone to just check this bit and just see, am I being, you know, pedantic? Am I overthinking it? Or is this actually going to be an issue? But I think having a solution or just being willing to help educate, I think education rather than slating is a huge difference in how a day will go and how we'll improve as a sport, I reckon.
100%.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm not, you know, I'm not saying that we should just be ignoring dangerous courses. Not what I'm saying at all, but if you don't know how to approach or you're worried about approaching, you know, you could just go find somebody who you respect who might be able to help. But at the end of the day, if somebody's not having it, you know, because I appreciate some judges might be funny. And I think this is kind of where it's an in-between almost, you know, maybe competitors have learned that the only way they're listened to is if they are aggressive. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. But I think that's quite... maybe let's not approach everybody with the same tone just because you've had a few past experiences.
Probably just that support is there. Even if you have to find it yourself, there is so many people out there who are willing to, even if you don't know them, you've never spoken to them, literally just message you. You know, we all have a passion and we all want to make our sport better. So if you need help and advice and you know someone who you think, wow, I really look up to that person, you know, just shoot them a message. And, you know, we're all friendly enough in this community that we can help and support each other. And I think that's the main thing, really. So, yeah, don't let that hold you back if that's something you're worried about.
That is such a good point. I think I know from personal experience, I did that. I don't know if you guys did it as well, the Love the Lines course when I did that. And that was so good. And actually, the support afterwards was really good as well. I mean, I approached Neil about several courses and he's been so helpful, and I'm sure I could speak to any one of the judges and competitors who run that day. But yeah, I think just knowing, like I say, you know, people do want to help, you know, it's just finding the right people who are there and want to support and help you grow as well. What advantages do you think being a younger judge brings?
I think maybe being younger, we're a little bit more open to change. We've mentioned that a little bit earlier, but I suppose because we're just seeing the sport evolve almost as we're getting into it, you know, we're almost seeing the future maybe a little bit more than it would be if we've seen it for this as it being the same for quite a while, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%. I think... the experience that we'll have to gain, I think being young, knowing that if I'm going to do this for, you know, another 40 years, where am I going to be in 40 years? I think that's a really exciting prospect to think about.
I think as much as I think, you know, some people might perceive being open-minded and flexible as being a way you can kind of manipulate. It's not really, it's not naivety. It's just, you know, we know what's right, we learn, we educate ourselves, and yeah, I don't think that being open-minded necessarily means you're going to fall for bullying or anything along that kind of line.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I think as well, I think, like I say, we've been open-minded. It's been open to criticism as well, like constructive criticism. I'm not saying I'm going to be open to people slating me because it's not perfect for their dog, but in terms of like my dog can't do that. But I think being open to that, you know, okay, maybe that bit is a little bit difficult, or maybe next time, you know, like you said earlier, with different heights of dogs, maybe look at just adjusting your course slightly. You know, being open to those constructive criticisms is so beneficial for how you'll progress as a judge, I guess.
Yeah,
I don't know if you guys agree.
Yeah, definitely. And I think just I like to think that I'm open-minded. There's definitely styles of courses I don't like, but also the style of courses I do. And I think everybody is the exact same of that. But I'd like to try and say that I'm open-minded, and that hopefully, you know, even, you know, 10, 15 years from now, I will still be open to change.
Yeah.
And, you know, feel free to keep me in check, guys.
Yeah, that's the big thing with me as well. I'm like, gosh, I'm saying this all now and I need to keep myself in check. The big thing, you don't want to become the hypocrite, do you? But no, I'm sure, you know, when you really care about something, you want to make sure that it's being continually progressed and improved. And yeah, I think it's just, you know, a lot of the older generation are actually really for all this, but there's just a few people that, you know, and we're being very stereotypical here, but, you know,
like we're
talking. Yeah, go on.
I just mean like how we've been stereotyped as young judges as well. So
yeah, exactly.
You know.
It swings and roundabouts.
Oh, yeah, gotcha. And I just want that, like, the main thing that I want. So the reason I started judging was I want to be the change that I want to see in the country.
Yeah.
So the number one reason I started judging is I was so fed up of not seeing safe courses. That's the biggest thing for me. Having a dog that is just so prone to injury, as I'm sure you guys know, it's just so important to me that I actually see these courses. And I feel like I don't have a right when I'm physically able to judge, to sit and complain about not seeing the courses I want to see. And you know, there's benefits to also wanting to set fun courses, but I think the very least that I want, I would just love to see safe courses. And I think clearly people seem to have a differing opinion on what's safe, but
I think that is a perfect point, and especially, like, say, being the change rather than, you know, sitting and kind
waiting
of
waiting for it.
Yeah, waiting for it, because as you say, you know, there's no time like the present. That, you know, we're not going to see a change unless you physically get up and do something about it. I mean, I did like, I had similar sort of motivations to do judging, and just because I wanted to give back to a sport that's given me so much as well. I think that was like a big factor for me. So, you know, sometimes I think, again, going back to this kind of respect and you know, being polite sort of point of view, we're trying to give back to people that have given to us as well. And I think for, you know, competitors that maybe you know, aren't seeing that perspective, just knowing that, you know, our motivations are there for the right reasons. We don't give up our day and our time of competing for any other reason other than the fact that we're doing it because we love the sport. I think that's the biggest message, is that the sport is such an important thing to all of us, and that's why we all get so passionate about it. But I think just enjoying the fact that, you know, those small successes and you know, realizing that there's much more to agility than complaining and whinging. And I think just kind of reassuring the fact that we do it because we love it. We're not doing it because, you know, we want success or fame or anything like that. It's because, you know, we want to give back at the end of the day. And I think that's similar for everyone, really, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And on wanting to give back, and just, you know, the whole reason we're doing this is because we have fun in agility. We love agility, you know. And some of us might have really big aspirations, but at the end of the day, it's all fun. We're doing it for fun. And don't get me wrong, dog safety and handler safety is a big key part of that. But at the same time, you know, we're doing it for fun, so we can't lose sight of that. You know, if there are courses you don't like, but there are loads of other courses you do, just, it's fine. Just go have fun on the ones you're going to have fun on. You know,
yeah.
And there's actually nothing wrong with a course. Maybe it's a bit hard and you don't like that it's a bit hard. That's okay. But also, maybe just try and go and give it your best shot if that's the only thing that's wrong with it. And just try and have a bit of a laugh, maybe. Because I mean, God, do you guys remember when you guys first started doing agility?
Oh,
I just,
God.
It was like, just get your dog for a tunnel, you know?
Yeah. Literally.
And because I do really have high goals as well in agility. But I think, you know, if we get so caught up in that, we're never going to enjoy it. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and that whole thing about kind of recognising that not every course is a course you're going to think is, you know, something you could get around or something that, you know, is going to be enjoyable for you. But you know, picking the course that you run, finding judges that you really enjoy, you know, stuff like that. I mean, at the end of the day, well, one of my dogs is now half blind. She's lost an eye. And I've realized very quickly that I am going to have to be a lot more careful about picking what courses I choose to run her on, simply because even if the judges set a very safe course, I also need to be thinking about my dog. And I think a lot of people do think about their dogs and what they can achieve. And some people just have very unconfident dogs. And I think that's, you know, fine if you have quite a challenging course and you have a dog that's not going to make it round and you think that's going to kill its confidence. Absolutely fine. You know what's best for your dog. Doesn't mean that the course is not suitable or appropriate. You know, I'm going to face some kind of point where I go, oh, that's such a cool course, but you know, she's going to struggle or something like that. That's at the end of the day, me being responsible for my dog, me acknowledging that that's nobody's fault. And I can choose exactly what I want to do with my agility rather than feeling forced to do a course that I don't like or isn't going to suit me.
Yeah, 100%. Like I say, you know, at the end of the day, we're the advocates for our dogs. And I think, you know, making sure that we're thinking of them and not pushing them into situations where maybe, you know, it's not going to be the best interest of the dog. I think that's 100% a really important message as well. And I really liked what you touched on as well about how when we first started doing agility, I know you mentioned that, Safi, like, it was incredible. Like, doing the tiniest things was amazing. I remember for weeks I was so happy that I did a wing wrap and three jumps in like a circle, like a little circle. I was so impressed with myself for weeks. And I think that sometimes we can lose perspective, I guess. And, you know, I mean, this goes for everything. I guess it goes for mindset as well, with competing as well as judging. You know, it's very easy to be hard on where you are now, but you kind of need to look back at where you've come from, I guess, and just put into perspective actually how far you've come, you know, what experiences you've had. And again, looking at the small things and how, for, you know, we shared a post that we'd seen on AgilityNet in the chat when we were talking about this podcast. And this competitor was so proud of their achievement. And to some, that is like an everyday thing. You know, that's an achievement maybe they've done many years ago. But for that competitor, that was like the best thing they've experienced. And they were so proud of it. And I think that's such a nice thing to look back on, I guess, and to put just everything into perspective. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, I think we touched on mindset earlier, mm-hmm. but it's such a, I think it's really underrated. And people do lose sight of mindset a lot. You know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, go in with a winner's mindset, which is absolutely like, yes, do it, go for it. But also, don't make that your expectation, you know, yeah. Make that your kind of goal, your ambition, but don't kind of get yourself down or, you know, get so het up on results, because at the end of the day, you've got little wins everywhere, every single time you go in the ring. I mean, for me, the first time I went in a ring, I was like, oh my God, you know, just getting my dog to stay focused with me the whole way round. That was like the most amazing thing to me. You know, he ran off and got eliminated at jump two. Oh, well, I got around, you know, with my dog and me staying connected. And obviously now that we're a lot better, my standards have gone up, but everybody's on an individual kind of journey. And I think don't lose sight of, you know, the little things, and don't get too lost in the bigger picture.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think just kind of, like you say, just thinking about where you've come and obviously don't lose the bigger picture is just a huge thing. And mindset is wonderful. I think having a strong mindset can be really beneficial. And I really like the way you spoke about, you know, how we go into things. Up, I'm a huge believer in the process over outcome goals, like that sort of thing, you know, rather than looking at like, okay, I want to win this class, and like that's great to go into if that works for you, but for me, like, if I set that expectation, it doesn't happen, it's very demotivating. And I guess this is probably a good thing for judges as well, kind of setting your expectations. Don't go in there kind of thinking, oh, I want so much compliments and like I want everyone to love my course, because that isn't something you can control. What you can control is, I want the dogs to, you know, I want it to be safe. I want to be happy with how it's set. And I guess just looking at the process over that, I want to know that I've set something that I'm comfortable with, I guess, rather than wondering about like the outcomes and what people are going to think. Because I think social media does have an impact on that as well. I guess that's something we can kind of discuss as well, is like how, you know, sometimes it's very rewarding when you get compliments and things like that. That's the way social media works. It's the way they've designed the whole system. Those small hits of dopamine when someone compliments you and everything like that. And I think if you're going into it looking for that validation, I think that's going to be where it'll maybe distress you, because that's, you know, something you can't control. And I guess that's a big thing that I think as a younger generation, maybe because we've grown up in that social media aspect, setting yourself up to succeed and not actually putting pressure on yourself to be like on social media the perfect person for with your courses and receiving so much praise, just because you know maybe you didn't get a couple of compliments or a couple of likes or anything like that, doesn't necessarily mean that your course isn't great, if that makes sense. I don't know if that's something you guys would agree on.
Definitely.
Yeah, totally. You know, I think in every aspect, in judging and competing, we need to realize that we need to try and feel happy with ourselves, no matter if it goes right or wrong. You know, like I really liked your point you were saying about with setting expectations you can realistically meet while judging Elise. So, you know, is my course safe? Am I happy with it? Actually, does it matter if somebody comes up to me and says, oh my God, that was the most amazing course? Because actually, do you know what? Yeah, I know. Like, I know it was, because I loved that course. And actually, I think there's probably no better feeling than not needing somebody else's comment to really lift you up. Because, you know, when you've set such a fun course that you go, oh my God, I love how this is running, it actually doesn't matter if anybody comes up and says that, because you can see it, you know, and you can kind of go, wow, I set that. And I think there's nothing more of a confidence boost than setting a course like that, but also just allowing yourself to feel that validation that you made that, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, it kind of goes into winning and losing. You know, if you go into a ring and think, I have to win this, and you don't win it, then it's not going to feel amazing, is it? Whereas if you go into a ring and you go, okay, I just want to go in and have fun. If we win, this is great. If we don't, fine, whatever. You're going to have a good time regardless, unless your dog does something absolutely horrific, but you know.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think as well, just like I say, you as long as you're making goals that you're in control of, rather than like, you know, you can't control what other people think, what other people do. We can only manage what we are in control of, if that makes sense. I've used control a lot of times in that sentence. But yeah, I'm sure you kind of get my gist with that one, if that's all good. Anything else you guys want to add?
Yeah, don't get me wrong. Compliments are nice. Like,
yeah, oh God, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we've been raised in this, you know, we've been raised to kind of just seek that instant gratification, really, haven't we? So I think, you know, learning, you know, not only as a young judge, but just everybody, that, you know, you don't need like a top judge to comment on your post and say, wow, amazing courses, especially if you've actually enjoyed how they ran yourself.
Yeah, 100%. I think that's a really nice
There's
point.
Nothing more gratifying than, you know, feeling satisfied by your own expectations, as we've all just said.
Yeah. I think I had an appointment very similar to what you kind of mentioned, Safi, where I was so happy with how it ran. And that validation, that self-validation from, I was really pleased with the way it was set and everything, was so rewarding. And then obviously, you know, the compliments you get are amazing. I mean, I can't remember really on the day how much I got. I think because I was in a bit of a blur, and I had a lot of blood moments that day. I almost tripped over a jump and all sorts. I mean, if that happens to anyone, don't worry, because it's happened to the best of us. Just style it out. But yeah, I think it wasn't obviously until later on that, you know, kind of when I shared my post of my course, and then it got, you know, nice compliments and people are really positive about it, that, you know, it gives you validation still, yeah, but I think the self-validation in the first place is the most important thing, you know, being proud of yourself. You don't need someone else to justify what you've done, if that makes sense. Like, as long as you're happy and you feel like you've done it to your best of your ability, I think that's the best we can ask for, really.
100%. And your best will only get better.
Exactly, yeah.
As long as you continue to try and improve yourself,
mm-hmm.
that's, you know, that standard is just going to go up and up and up.
100%. And like I say, if you're going home, you're working on your courses, you're looking at, you know, how do I improve? Where did things go wrong? Where could I, you know, where could I emulate that again? Because that worked really well. I think you'll grow. I think it's all about that growth mindset and actually wanting to improve. I think that will set people apart in judging in terms of, you know, do I want to improve? Yes. Okay. Well, how can I do that? That's going to be really important in sort of progressing and feeling more confident, I guess, as well. You know, it's not about feeling like you're the best and you're the top. It's more about, you know, feeling comfortable in your abilities, I'm presuming, and feeling like you can do it. Because it is daunting that first year, I think.
Yeah. And yeah. I think once you get that confidence, you also then have that confidence to actually kind of go, do you know what? No, I love this course. There's nothing wrong with my course. And if somebody finds an issue with your course, you then have the confidence to go, do you know what? This person's wrong. They can have their own thoughts, but actually there's nothing wrong with this course and I love it. And I have the confidence to stand here, you know? I think there's no better feeling than thinking that you're like, do you know what? Actually, I feel confident enough to back up my own decisions without anybody needing to be with me.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah, it's almost a form of self-love, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can't expect other people to love what you don't love.
Exactly. That is such a good point.
Oh, I love that.
That got quite deep.
Amazing. I don't know if there's anything else you guys want to add, if there's anything we've missed or any kind of points you thought along the way that would be good to mention.
I thought a minute ago about saying about how there's been a lot of new young judges this year that I thought have brought out so many amazing courses.
Yeah. Oh god, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like this year especially there's been quite a lot of new young judges that have come out, and I think that's quite nice, but obviously it's still coming with its troubles. But I do feel like agility is evolving, and I think as much as sometimes we feel like it's almost staying like a stalemate, I think that's probably the right word, you know, agility still is evolving, and obviously we have like Agility Nexus to look forward to.
Yeah.
And I think the future is really exciting, as much as we keep looking forward to the future.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think, like you said, so many young judges have actually come out this year, and it's been really exciting to watch. And I would name a lot of it. I mean, you guys are obviously on there. I would name my full list of them, but I would hate to miss anyone. But there are so many judges that I'm seeing now, and I'm thinking, God, their courses are so fluent, and they should be really confident in what they're setting, because the skills are there, the eye for it is there. And you know, your age doesn't define you. Don't let it kind of make you feel as though it does. Awesome. Okay, so I guess we can kind of mention a little brainstorm we've had, or brainchild, I should call it, that could be coming up, hopefully, if there's a demand for it. We've kind of discussed about maybe putting together a Facebook group or a community where young judges can kind of support each other and lean on each other for advice, whether that's, you know, confidence things or just feeling like they can share experiences and know how to feel supported and have a place where they can go. So if there is interest for that, we are working on it. It's literally just been a brainchild just recently, so do bear with us, but I think that'll be a really exciting project if we can get that up and running, and hopefully it'll help a lot of the young judges and more to come, fingers crossed. Thank you so much, Grace and Safi. You have been incredible, and I'm so excited to see where this is going to go. So for anyone that's interested in kind of following along on your judging journeys, where can they find you on potentially Instagram? I'm thinking that's probably the best place to find you guys. What's your Instagrams for anyone that's interested? I will link them, by the way, as well, if anyone does want to find them.
Right. Well, I've got two. So I've got, well, I might as well, I've got a brand new account that's for all my agility stuff, because I thought it's about time that, you know, all my friends that are not to do with agility, they probably don't want to see it. So I've got a new account. It's called Orium Agility. I don't really know. I'm going to have to spell that out because it's probably not how people think it's spelt. So it's Aurium Agility. All together, no spaces, no underscores. Perfect. There's not much there at the moment, but there will be.
Yeah, what's this space?
My Instagram is brindlespots. It's spelt kind of exactly how it sounds. I'm not spelling it out because I'll embarrass myself. I post my courses on Facebook, but it's private, so I might add you, I might not, I suppose. If you have a lot of mutual friends, I'll probably add you, but if you're some random person listening to this podcast, probably not.
Yeah, and I do sometimes put courses on, you know, like these Facebook groups, Course Plans UK, or you know, there's a group that's got you know, more like people from all over the place post agility courses on Facebook. And that's where I like to look at a lot of international design as well. So, you know, I float around on those as well.
Amazing. We can find you in lots of places. That's so cool. Well, yeah, thank you so much.
So yeah, thank you so much if you've listened this far, and thank you again to Grace and Safi for their expertise and the stories they shared. As well, I'd like to say a huge thank you to the podcast sponsors, Nalo Agility and Pause Trading. Super exciting to say that, I can't believe it. And thank you again for listening to another episode. If you've got any suggestions or any guests you'd like to hear, please do get in touch. You can find me on Facebook now. We now have a Facebook page, which I will link in the description. And we also have my Instagram, which is Agility Rose. So definitely get in touch if you want any kind of queries with the podcast. And enjoy your week, guys. We've got lots of exciting guests coming up, so I will be sharing those on both social media. So keep an eye out for those and enjoy your weekend.